Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the 4th of July edition of the Boneyard. It's the day after my birthday, so hey, everybody party hard last night, take the day off, right? Yeah. As a matter of fact, make it a three-day weekend for yourself. You can recover from celebrating the birth of your good friend and host. No, seriously, before we get too deep into the show, guys, I love being an American. I do. I love being an American regardless of who's in the White House, regardless of who controls the House of Representatives, the Senate. I'm not saying those things aren't important, but I am very blessed to be born American, and by the grace of God, I was born a Mississippian. But the more that I travel, the more that I learn how blessed we are to be Americans. And there are some people, and I'm not saying we don't have problems. We do. We do. But we've had problems throughout our history, and we found a way to overcome those. But the reality of it is that we live in the greatest country in the world. We do. And we're the country that invented rock and roll. That's important to understand, too. You know, the Beatles weren't a big thing until they broke on the Ed Sullivan Show in the United States. Everybody wants to break big in America, which is why bands like Def Leppard sound American, even though they're British. We don't speak redcoat here, sir, to borrow a phrase from Three Year Letterman. But, the older I get, the more this 4th of July stuff matters to me. And I don't mean the parties and, you know, the barbecues and all that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, that, you know, I went and got a hamburger from the gas station, you know. Because it's a work day for me. Every day is a work day for me. And matter of fact, we've had 14 stories already today at jeanspage.com. The Boneyard will be probably the last one of the day, unless something breaks. But I think it's important to kind of understand, and I mean this with as much love as I can possibly muster, some of the people that constantly complain about being in America and about all the problems in America. And again, I'm not saying we don't have some. We do. You've never traveled. Your worldview is incredibly small. When you do a little research, talk to some other people. I tell you, some of the greatest Americans that you'll ever meet are legal immigrants. Because they know what it's like to live on the other side. When I was out in Albuquerque, and I swear I have way too many memories in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and not many of them good, but when I was out in Albuquerque, you kind of get a sense talking to those people, how fortunate and blessed they are to be in the United States, to escape a land of poverty, scandal, criminals. And listen, I've traveled to Mexico extensively. Love going down there. It's a great place to visit. It's not a place I'd want to live. But for those of you that were born here and kind of take America for granted, let me encourage you to go sit down and have a very honest and earnest conversation with somebody who elected to move here, or maybe moved here as a family, as a child. You know, I think about Gene Simmons from Kiss. You know, his mother, of course, fled to the United States, fleeing World War II in Nazi Germany. And there's nobody probably that's a greater proponent for American values, good, bad, or indifferent, than Gene Simmons. I would encourage you to pull up the YouTube video of the interview with Dan Rather and Gene Simmons, the segment about his mother, you know. And I remember, if I remember correctly, like somebody had sent like a care package, and there was like a jacket that had some holes in it, and he was glad to have it because he didn't have a jacket. And he said there was like a jar of peaches, and he ate the peaches, and he said that was the sweetest thing he'd ever put in his mouth. And he said one of the reasons what made it so rewarding is that he knew that somebody somewhere cared. Somebody cared enough to send that package to he and his mother. You know, of course, it's kind of like the Operation Christmas Child thing. Like, I'm sure there were a lot of people involved in that war relief effort that were anonymously sending packages to people they'd never meet or see. And so I think about those things on days like today, because there are a lot of things that make me mad. I mean, they do. And I mean, maybe mad's the wrong word. Maybe irritated. I don't get mad very often anymore. But the reality of it is that we are so incredibly blessed to live in a country where we are free to complain. Right? I read and see these reels on social media at times where people in England are getting arrested for things they've said on Facebook. Yeah, it's true. And I remember, and you guys have probably read these stories too, I remember that there were a couple of campers that they elected to go hike in the Middle East to go prove everybody wrong. And they went and hiked over there and they found their bodies a couple weeks later. You know, and so I am not anti-Middle East. I'm not anti-much of anything. But I am kind of anti-whining, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, listen, when you travel to another country, you got to do so under their rules and conditions, right? I mean, you can't, like, just think about this. You couldn't just show up, you know, wearing a tank top and a, you know, American flag do-rag and, you know, playing Motley Crue on a boombox and walk around and expect nobody to say anything. I mean, you know, there are social customs in every place, and you want to go respect those customs. It's just incredible to me that we have so many people in America that think the customs of other countries are more sacred than those in our country. Right? Why are we so respective of them and their cultures, and then not respective of our own cultures and our own selves? That doesn't make any sense to me. It's like in some respects, you're saying they're better than us. I don't think any of us are better than anybody. Everybody has the same value in many respects. Everybody is entitled to the same protections under the law, provided to do things the right way. You know, I saw something earlier. I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but I'll get to the central point here. I saw this thing earlier where this young lady was driving without a license, not a suspended license, she just didn't have one. And she gave some information that was not correct to the police officer. And the police officer told her, he goes, hey, you know, your answers are kind of going to determine how this encounter goes. And so she continued to lie and about her criminal history. And so they ended up taking her into custody for driving without a license. And in the middle of all that, she created this physical altercation and was later charged with resisting arrest. Probably should have charged her with resisting arrest with violence. They put her in the back of the car, and she goes absolutely bananas. So as a guy with a criminal record, and it's been a long time since I even had a speeding ticket, decades, let me encourage you this, a little friendly advice on 4th of July. If you get in trouble, shut your mouth. Right, you're not going to have court right there on the side of the highway. You're not going to, once you're in custody and in the back of the car, you're not going to convince the officer that you are innocent. You got to let the plot process play out. Just go pay your bond and get out and shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. That is one of the greatest pieces of advice I could ever give to anybody, legal or otherwise. Just shut your mouth. But when you're in the back of that police car and everything's being recorded, you are only hurting your case. Because even if you're forthright, you're like, hey, you know, I'm sorry this happened. I shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that. Well, that's all going to be used against you in court. So don't think you're going to be able to do a backseat confessional and then show up in court and plead not guilty and win that case. Super, right? The flip side of it is if you get out there and you act like an idiot and you start kicking around and banging on the cage and hollering and screaming at the officer and making threats and talking about you hope their dog dies and things like that, that's going to be played for the judge too. So again, in the event that you are ever arrested, just shut your mouth. And you don't have to be some First Amendment auditor on the side of the road. If you are speeding, they pull you over, give them your license and insurance and just shut up. We can have great encounters with law enforcement when we have them if we just kind of go along with what we're supposed to do. I'm not saying let them search your car. I'm a firm believer in that. I don't I got a Fourth Amendment that says that I don't have to agree to any searches or seizures. And if you want to roll your dice and say you've got probable cause, that's something we can litigate later. But you're not going to have court on the side of the road, and you're not going to convince anybody of your guilt or innocence in the backseat of a car that's going to make any difference. So again, enjoy the 4th of July. Do not drink and drive. Call me. I'll come get you. Call an Uber. It's probably better. I'm probably going to be asleep. But don't do anything stupid. Don't do anything stupid. Enjoy the weekend. Don't put you or anybody else in harm's way. Don't get out on these jet skis and things of that nature and drive fast in boats while you've been drinking. Be responsible. Let's have a good time. Let's everybody get home and put some Noxzema on the sunburn and be ready to go to work on Monday morning. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We do. I'm going to have some Bulldog Burger Company this week, if not this weekend. I look forward to that. I've been craving a hamburger. And when you need a hamburger in your life, there's only one place to go. It's Bulldog Burger Company. They specialize in burgers. They have a little bit of everything, but you go there primarily for the hamburger. Again, very diverse menu, but when I'm craving a hamburger, why would I deny myself the opportunity to go to Bulldog Burger Company? Unsurpassed service, quality of product, atmosphere, simply outstanding. Every time that I go there, I feel better when I leave because I go to get a great meal. I don't just go to eat. I go to enjoy a dining experience. That's exactly what you get at Bulldog Burger Company. Check out one of their three great locations, University Drive here in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. We all need more of that. We do. We're getting older. You take better care of ourselves. Eat more spring rolls. Find your own favorites. You know, I'm a Pimentology ad bacon guy. I do mix it up from time to time and get the Fresh and 15, sometimes the Bryant, occasionally the Lauren. And sometimes when I feel like I need a little more protein, I'll jump on the Smokehouse. When I'm not feeling a burger, I have the BLT salad. More times than not, I get it grilled. You may prefer it fried. It's up to you. I always get it with ranch dressing, no matter how it's prepared. And sometimes if I just want a good lunch portion, I get those Sloppy Joe sliders. Great. Reminds me of like Sunday nights at home, right? After that Sunday night training union service at church, go home, have something quick and easy. Sloppy Joe's are always the best, man. Reminds me of being home, putting my feet on a mama's table. Get that chocolate shake. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. I have now spoken to every single one of the Mississippi State Baseball Portal editions. You can read all of the stories. I haven't written a story. Loger is the only one I haven't written a story on yet. We'll do that first part of the week. But, yeah, busy couple of days catching up with these guys. And some of that's by design, too. You won't let the portal close. You know, it's a little different strategy and demand with how this stuff goes sometimes. But nevertheless, I've spoken to them all. A couple of things I want to say. There are a lot of attributes, shared attributes, with many of these players. And many of the players that are headed to Mississippi State speak kind of a similar language of that of those from the University of Virginia. It is clear to me that Brian O'Connor and his staff kind of have a type. And I don't just mean statistically. I'm talking more on the personal side. That's one of the reasons I like talking to these guys. Talk a little baseball with them, kind of see what they're, you know, how they're coming, what they like about Mississippi State, what the rest of the process looked like. All of that stuff is important to me. I want to know. I can tell you, Aiden Teal, one of the better interviews that I've done in my career. That guy is extremely well-spoken. His family's done a great job with him. Really no question about it. I spoke to Tyler Pitzer today, and you can read all these stories for free. You don't have to be a member of jeanspage.com, but you should be. You can find him on my socials, but you can find him at jeanspage.com, or you can just kind of Google and look for him, you know. But the reality of it is some of these guys, are they kind of knew what they were going to do, and Tyler Pitzer was one of them. And it's interesting, you know, the Tyler Pitzer connection to Mississippi State comes through Justin Parker. And he told me, he goes, you know, hey, Parker was still kind of figuring all this stuff out. Were they going to keep him? Were they not? And he goes, I had to kind of see how that was going to go before I made a decision. But he was very patient with the process because he wanted to work with Park. And it's interesting, too, there's a handful of these guys that have not taken an official visit to Mississippi State. And it's, you know, that's interesting to me. But guys like Tyler Pitzer and Brendan Sweeney, they played here this year. And Tyler Pitzer spoke about that. We had a chance to see the weight room, go in the indoor, and kind of get a sense of it. Now, those guys are coming from Founders Park, too. And I think Founders Park in South Carolina is the second best stadium in the conference. It's not the second best atmosphere. It's so funny, you get on these rabbit holes on social media, the people making their list of stadiums they've never visited just to get engagement. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, Alex Box is easily the best. Listen, there's not a true LSU fan that's traveled that'll tell you Alex Box is the best stadium in the country. Now, in an NCAA regional or a super regional, the atmosphere there rivals the best in college baseball. It does, a very rabid fan base. But from a facility standpoint, no. No, it's not. And LSU people will tell you, like when we opened the Dude in its grand splendor, LSU people left and right, like when they came to see us, they said, man, we got to get it together. We've let the Box get old. You know, they got those aluminum bleachers out there in right field and what they call the diamond deck, you know, where Braylon Skinner nearly hit a home run over the top of that thing. LSU people that truly love baseball recognize that the Box is good, really good. It's not great. Used to be. It's a great atmosphere, but it's not a great stadium. It's been a long time. Founders Park does not have great atmosphere. Like South Carolina, when they beat Tennessee a couple years ago, it was a big weekend, right? It was great. But by and large, that crowd is rather subdued. The atmosphere at Bomb Walker at Arkansas, clearly better. Even during a midweek game, better than what you're going to see at Founders. The atmosphere, I would say, on weekends at Swayze Field, better than what you're going to see at Founders. Even though Founders is a better facility than Swayze. And some people don't like it when you say that. You know, and a lot of that angst is born out of insecurity. Well, when you've traveled extensively and you've had a chance to see all of the SEC ballparks, I guess with the exception of Texas. I haven't been to Texas. We'll do that next year. Been there for football, not baseball. But when you've traveled and you've had a chance to see these parks and not just see them on television, and that's one of the points that I made to somebody earlier today. You know, before Tennessee started their renovation, you see it on television, you think, man, it's a good-looking park. What is on TV? It's very antiquated elsewhere. So they're taking some steps, obviously, to kind of catch up with the rest of the league. And it'll be super nice. And, of course, there'll be some fans that have never attended a ball game outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, that'll tell you it's the best stadium in the country. And it won't be. There's only one. It's Mississippi State. And Tyler Pitzer talked about that. You know, he said, hey, you know, Founders is a great park, so it was an easy decision for me because of Parker and the facilities at Mississippi State. But I suspect that we won't see a lot of enhancements at South Carolina during this kind of historic run of women's basketball because they're allocating more resources for that. And you know what? It's paid off for them, right? That's not in any way saying that's the wrong move. They won a couple national championships under Ray Tanner in baseball. Well, now women's basketball is kind of the maybe the secondary sport of choice. I would venture to say that people like women's basketball in South Carolina better men's basketball, right? I mean, they expect to win every time they go out there, right? And so there is a casualty for that investment, and it has come at the expense of baseball. Now, they're doing some things now, you know, money-wise, you know, in the portal and things like that to kind of improve the roster, and it'll be interesting to see you know, how Paul Maneri and that group goes this year. But Pitzer's a guy, again, very committed to Justin Parker and has enjoyed his conversation, you know, with the rest of the staff, Brian O'Connor included. Davion Hixon, and it is Davion according to him. It's not Davion, it's Davion. Is actually packing up and moving out of Houston right now. He is from Palmetto, Florida. Going to go home and train and kind of wait out the draft that will run from, what is it, 13th and 14th of July. Davion is one of these guys, too, that it's going to be interesting to see where he is picked, if he is picked. Reminder, there are a lot of people that if they don't agree to terms, they don't get selected, right? You guys understand that, right? Especially top 10 rounds, because there are rules in place to prevent people from just kind of parking, right? You got to actually have a deal in place or close to a deal, at least a deal in principle, before you make a pick. I don't think Davion Hixon is going to be a guy that goes into top 10 rounds unless something big happens later. So as a result, going in the second half of the draft, you know, the minimum is $150,000. And I let's just say that I have it on good authority. He is not going to sign for the minimum. If he's going to sign for the minimum, his better options to go to Mississippi State, try to improve himself, work with Justin Parker, kind of beef up a little bit, then have the opportunity to go back in next year and maybe put himself in a situation where he can make some rev share and NIL money this year. Because if you're going to pay me $150,000 this year and $150,000 next year, and I can get somebody else to do that now, let's just say for an example, this is just my opinion, right? If he's only going to get $150,000 this year, and Mississippi State is willing to get anywhere close to that, let's say State's willing to pay him $100,000, well, then he can get that same $150,000 next year. So then you've kind of double-dipped. You bet on yourself and you give an opportunity to improve yourself, improve your stock against Southeastern Conference hitters. So maybe perhaps you put yourself in a better situation next year. That's where NIL and rev shares kind of change the game. It's not a foregone conclusion now that every junior is going to sign. Many of them will. But Hixon, very well-spoken guy. I think you guys are going to enjoy him. One of the better interviews that I've done lately, too, is Drew Weyers. We spoke about him recently on Wednesday's show as he committed and kind of popped up out of nowhere. But Drew Weyers was recruited in high school by Brian O'Connor and Kevin McMullen and those guys. And so they had a pre-existing relationship with him, and things just kind of picked up where they left off. And a lot of people think, oh, well, Steve, four schools in 4 years. What's wrong with the kid? Nothing. Nothing wrong with him. He began his career at Stetson. They made a coaching change. He went in the portal, had trouble finding traction, landed at Manhattan. Coaching change. Wasn't a great program. Wasn't a great situation. And now there's a new coaching staff coming in. I'm going to get in the portal. Lands at Bryant. Has a huge year. Huge. The America East Player of the Year. He could have hung around at Bryant, but you know what? He may get drafted, right? So why not bet on yourself? And it's like, hey, either I'm going to sign a pro contract or I can land at a premium program like Mississippi State in kind of a similar situation. And now I'm not going to sign for the minimum. So I have a little leverage here. Right? If all you're going to offer me is $150,000, well, I'm going to go to school because I can probably get $150,000 from Mississippi State. But if you're going to give me $250,000, then maybe I'll sign. And so now there is some leverage. And listen, we are going to lose some portal guys and some high school guys to the draft. I spoke to Jacob Parker today. Not currently listed as a top 100 player in the MLB draft pool. And I think that makes it a possibility that he comes to school. A lot of people are forecasting him to be a first-round draft pick. And it only takes one, right? Nobody is going to contact MLB.com's experts and say, hey, what do you think? Is he a first-rounder? No club is going to do that. Some fans will do that. But you begin to ask yourself, if he's not going to be one of the top 100 picks, I think he probably would be. Does he come to school? You know, Brian O'Connor, of course, had a chance to meet with him and his brother on Monday, and they talked a little bit about that. I mean, you get to kind of pick and choose how you want to spend your years 18 through 21. If you come to Mississippi State and you work hard, the chances of you getting into the minors and kind of getting up the ranks of the minors a little quicker is probably what would happen, because you'd have the experience of college baseball under your belt. That's an important aspect of things. And that's one of the things a lot of Virginia players have said. One of the reasons that I chose Virginia and Brian O'Connor is because if you look at the success they've had at getting guys to the majors, not just getting them drafted and not just getting them to double A, but getting them to the majors. And you look at the success that we've had, and now you couple that with Brian O'Connor's developmental program, you begin to kind of realize that maybe this is the best of both worlds. I had someone earlier mention this. And it's interesting, because sometimes we can't be objective about our own program, right? I love, absolutely love, our baseball tradition and our history. But I think we can be frank and say, you know what? Relative to our investment, we've underachieved at times. Even as great as it's been sometimes, it should have been and could have been much grander. And I believe now that we have a head coach that has proven himself, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but slightly lower level of baseball program at Virginia, certainly with less funding. Now all of a sudden we have a coach who has achieved some great things. Again, 7 trips to Omaha in 22 years and a national championship. We don't have that same record in the last 20 years. Let's just be honest about it. We don't. And so I think it's a good marriage in that respect, because Brian O'Connor has been extremely successful in getting top-tier talent to come to school and then develop them into professional grade prospects. And along the way, they win a lot of games. That's an important aspect of this. I mean, how many times last year, and really in the last few years, have you just kind of hoped to win rather than expected to win? I'll be honest with you guys. One of the low points for me this past year was that Friday night loss to South Carolina. And listen, I get it. It's difficult to sweep in the SEC. But at home and against a team like that that really struggled, we expected to sweep that series. We dropped the Friday night game. And I remember Mike Nemeth, Jacob Bain, and Dave Murray and I, we didn't get out of there until probably 1 o'clock in the morning, just kind of talking about what could potentially be coming. And I remember telling those guys that night, I said, guys, you need to be prepared. Don't make any early summer plans, because we're probably going to be covering a coaching search. Now, of course, we rebounded and took the series and ended up sweeping Alabama. All of a sudden, things were kind of trending in the right direction. But those are the kinds of games. And listen, I get it. It's SEC baseball. But if we were going to be the program and the team and have the season that we expected, you can't lose those games. You simply can't lose them. And granted, we were in that position because we let some games get away early. I mean, you go back and look in hindsight of this team. I mean, LSU wins a national championship, right? And can we objectively say that we should have taken 2 out of 3 from them in Baton Rouge? I think that's a fair thing to say. You know, certainly we all know about the 2-1 loss we had with Pico, where Pico gets beat by 2 solo home runs and we can only manage 1 run. And granted, that LSU pitching staff was elite, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, but you get them early, it's kind of a wild thing. And, you know, we blow that Thursday game, had the big lead in that game, in the middle innings, couldn't hold it, had a couple of freshmen kind of melt on the mound there. I mean, we're just rolling along here. Get an early lead, we expand it. Guys, it's 6-2 in the fifth. And if you're like me, you're thinking, hey, if we can get into this Tiger bullpen a little bit, got a chance to really set up the weekend pretty well. And then what do? We give up 5 runs in the fifth and then don't score the rest of the game. We dropped a 16-10 overall and 1-6 in league. LSU was 24-3 at the time. But again, they made the plays to win the game. We didn't. And again, then game two, you lose 2-1. You get blown out in the third game because we had gone all in to win those first two games and came up snake eyes. You guys see it the same way that I do. You know, go back a little bit to the Oklahoma series. You know, you win one there, but, you know, goodness, you come back. You beat Kyson Witherspoon in a pitching duel on Friday night, and you feel great about the weekend. And then you knock their Saturday starter all over the yard. You get way behind early. You fight your way back and take the lead and then blow it. And then you get beat on Sunday. I mean, so it's like you look back in hindsight and say, you know, hey, we should have taken two or three there. Now, goodness, you go back. All these games with Texas, who's a top eight national seed, you lose 8-7 on Friday. You lose 5-3 in the first game of doubleheader, then 4-1, and give Volantis a lot of credit. But all those games were competitive. But we have to have this urgency to win at all times. It's in the dadgum fight song. Win the game today. And how many times do we go through this where we let games go that we shouldn't have? And then you take two out of three from Alabama over in Tuscaloosa and you feel like, okay, things are turning in the right direction. We got to find a way to win this series over a struggling Florida team. They got hot. Basically got hot in Starkville. And was as hot as anybody in the country down the stretch. But you drop two out of three to them, and those first two games were pretty embarrassing, especially that first one. But again, you know, then you go to Auburn thinking, okay, you win this series, you put yourself in a good position. Back in the hosting discussion, if you can get hot, because we knew how the rest of the month of May should play out for us. And you go over there and you get beat 6-5. And let's be honest about it. We left Pico in too long. We said it then. We'll say it now. We left him in one hitter, two hitters too long. You bounce back and win game two. And again, we had the big lead and nearly let him come back and make it super interesting. And then you blow the game on Sunday. I mean, you know, we were out of pitching at that point. Again, we'd gone all in to win the first two games and just didn't have enough left to win game three. And then you fire your coach. Well, then what do? You sweep Kentucky. You take two out of three from Ole Miss, and you sweep Missouri. But the reality of it is we should have never been in that position where we had so many must-win games and must-win series down the stretch. And granted, this year for Brian O'Connor, Virginia wasn't their best year. They arguably still should have made the tournament. We've made that case on the show when it happened. I mean, you don't finish five or six games above 500 in a Power 5 conference, a baseball conference, and not make the tournament, but they had some midweek losses. And so that's one of those things, too. You know, Mississippi State, pretty good job in the midweek last year once we got through the first month of the season. But there is an expectation at Mississippi State. And I think we have a coach that embraces those expectations. I've had a chance to meet with him one-on-one a couple times now. Sat down with him. Goodness, what day was it? What day did Ace announce he was coming back? On Monday? And had a chance to sit down with Coach O'Connor then, ran the story. I guess I met with him on Tuesday. We ran the story on Wednesday. But I can tell you from my interaction to Brian O'Connor, he loves to be at a place where fans expect to win at a high level because he expects to win at a high level. And that's the thing about accountability. People that are winners embrace accountability. They don't shy away from it. They don't look at this and say this isn't fair. Brian O'Connor came here understanding that you and I and Zach Selman and Mark Keenum and everybody else is ready to celebrate another national championship. And I hope we stack up several during O'Connor's tenure. I hope we're making regular pilgrimages to Omaha. And you guys have to kind of forego those trips down the Destin and Gulf Shores because of the fact you're going to be in Omaha. That's what we want. We want to be an Omaha mainstay. We want to be a team that is consistently a top eight. And I believe Brian O'Connor is going to bring that. And one of the things that I asked him when I met with him, how do you feel about so many of these players buying in, talking national championship? And you could see on his face, you know, it resonated well with him. But he goes, you know, the first day of practice, we're not going to be talking about national championships. We're going to be talking about foundational standards. Winning organizations, whether they be athletic or business, have foundational standards. These are the things. This is the minimum that we're willing to accept, and we're not going to accept anything less than this. There's a lot of people out there that talk about standards and are really just suggestions. I get the sense from talking to Brian O'Connor, that's a different deal with him. The standards are the standards, and the standards at Mississippi State are much higher than they are most places in college baseball. It's time for, I guess, let's just do our player of the day. I almost went right through it. Our player of the day. I think we go with two. Ryan McPherson and Ace Reese, and we just gave it to Ace a couple days ago. But Ryan McPherson and Ace Reese earn a spot, Team USA Baseball. How super cool is that? Representing our nation, and to find out on July 4th. Players or player of the day brought to you by Blair Chandler, our friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. Blair's a guy that gets after it, man. We talk about having standards. You need to have a loan originator that has high standards too, because they understand how things work and expectations for themselves that are probably unsurpassed. That's Blair Chandler. 24 years of experience. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Let him be your advocate for underwriting. Follow him on his website, closewithblair.com. Or give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. We have had several Boneyard listeners that have closed loans with Blair. And I like to keep business in the family whatever we can. We should support each other. We absolutely should. When I get ready to do business and there are two businesses similarly situated, I always opt for the Mississippi State business. Always. And many people do the same for us. And so I encourage you to do the same. We used to have the old maroon pages. Blair would have a full-page ad in that thing. But, yeah, again, players of the day, Ryan McPherson, right-handed pitcher, and Ace Reese, of course, you know him well. Both of those guys make to the Team USA Baseball cuts. And how significant is that? That's one of those things, too, that I'm really excited about. I've reached out to both of those guys to share our pride in them. I think that's one of the most important things that we can do is support each other. But you've got some young men that will be representing Mississippi State and representing our country at the same time. All right, time for today's top 10 list. We had a suggestion comes to us from the jeanspage.com message boards. This is brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. Very easy to find. I've had some people hit me up recently, say, hey, what's the name of that guitar shop? Kalido Guitars, based out of Lake Jackson, Texas. It is a family-owned and operated business by Bulldogs. They have family here in Stargold. They get back every now and again, come to a ball game, go visit grandma. You know, that's all part of the deal. I like to support each other. Now, if you have a guitar player in your family or if you were a guitar player yourself, you can get completely outfitted at a Mississippi State business, Kalido Guitars, C-A-L-I-D-O, guitars.com. Whether you're looking for an acoustic guitar, an electric guitar, a classical guitar, a beginner's guitar, a professional-grade guitar, and everything in between, you can find it at Kalido. In addition to that, you can get cases, gig bags, accessories, anything that you need to be a guitar player. The guitar stand, I've got one. You need one too. You don't need your guitar leaning up against the wall. It's bad for the neck. All of a sudden, you start picking it up. Things don't sound the same. It's because you've damaged the neck. Now you got to go buy a new rig, right? And so let me encourage you, shop with the winners, shop with the Bulldogs, KalidoGuitars.com, and they'll give you some incentive to do so. Mention to them you heard about us on the show. Just give them the promo code BSR. It doesn't matter if you do it in person, online, or over the phone. Use promo code BSR, and that's going to trigger some things. That's going to give you a 10% discount on your purchase. That's going to give you no shipping. That's going to give you no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. And they're going to make a 5% donation of your purchase price to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. I wish more Bulldog businesses did that one. These are some people that are very desperate and very grateful for your Mississippi State business. Let's be sure and we give it to them. KalidoGuitars.com. Okay, so our suggestion, a lot of people would say, but Steve, let's do 4th of July. We've done the 4th of July list every year on the 4th of July. And again, yesterday was my birthday. And so somebody said, hey, how about a top 10 list of birthday songs? So I thought, shoot, let's do it. But I wanted to kind of change it up a little bit. This is a very eclectic list. There'll be some artists you don't know and some songs you don't know, but they're all in the birthday theme. We're going to start number 10. Not maybe the most well-known Stevie Wonder song, but it's his version of Happy Birthday, but it's not like the traditional one. It's his own thing. It's a little bit airy, like it's a little bit 80s in that respect. Like it's not the traditional Stevie Wonder just kind of tickling the ivories. It's a little bit different, and I think it's one that you'll enjoy. Number 9, it's the Pet Shop Boys. This is a birthday song, but you could also consider it a Christmas song, because while the lyrical content kind of suggests, you know, it's about a birthday boy, it's almost basically kind of paying homage to Jesus Christ himself. Because it's kind of written around Christmas time. And so you can make that inference. This is about Jesus. And, of course, the Pet Shop Boys are always kind of the punchline of one of our top 10 list jokes, you know. But Pet Shop Boys, maybe we should do a top 10 Pet Shop Boys list. I don't know if we could. Maybe we can. We'll see. But there you go, birthday boy. Number 8, a band you don't know very well, but I think you'll enjoy. They're out of Glasgow, Scotland, back from the early 80s, kind of in a post-punk Blondie-type box, if that makes sense. They had some hits across the way, a few hits in America. It's a band called Altered Images. And basically, they are pretty, and I hate to use the term stereotypical, but the alternative rock scene in the United States kind of mirrors what they were doing. And again, it made sense that they would break in America because of the fact so much of it sounded like some things that were happening here in the States when it came to college radio. And that used to be where we found our alternative music was college radio. But Altered Images, Happy Birthday. And it's really kind of a sweet song. But it, again, it's kind of got that early Blondie vibe. You know, as Blondie began and Debbie Harry began to kind of evolve as a band. Number 7, it's Jimmy Buffett and Martina McBride's Trip Around the Sun. And it's kind of a song of reflection about the good things, the bad things that all happened in the last year. I'm always so grateful when I get to my birthday because so many of you reach out on social media. And I do appreciate that. To be honest with you, it kind of feels like a job sometimes because I don't want to let any of those messages go unliked, if that's what it means. And I do respond to some of them too, but it's such an interesting cross-section. Like when you roll through, and I wrote about that last night, I mean, you roll through this thing and it's like, oh, well, that's somebody I grew up with. Well, that's somebody that I met at a show. That's somebody I know in recovery. That's somebody that needed my help one day. That's somebody that I needed to help me. This is somebody I bought a dog from. This is somebody that I had a meal with. And so you begin to have these periods of reflection. And I think that's an important aspect of it, too. I don't sit around and ruminate on my problems. I try to focus on what's happening today and what I plan to do tomorrow. I don't spend a lot of time focusing on the past. And it took me a lot of years to get there. But I am done with the past, even if the past isn't done with me. If that makes sense to you. Like when I wrote When the Bottom Falls, in many respects, I didn't choose to close the door on the past, nor do I choose to regret any of that stuff. But it was basically very cathartic for me where I could just kind of officially move on, if that makes sense to you. Number 6, it's the Beatles. And many of you know this song but don't realize you know this song. If you're a Gen Xer, the greatest generation of all time, especially when it came to arts and music, you know this song from, ironically, the movie 16 Candles, where we got to know the very cute Molly Ringwald for the first time. 16 Candles is an amazing movie. Love it. It's very stereotypical of the time. Of course, there's Long Duck Dong. How much fun was that? But Anthony Michael Hall is trying to pick up Molly Ringwald in the movie. And it's her birthday, right? And he sings a little song. You say it's your birthday. It's my birthday too. Well, that's the Beatles. That's the Beatles' birthday. And it's only about two minutes and 20 seconds long or so. But it's not a well-known Beatles track, but there's the popular culture reference that you've been waiting for. Number 5, this song is really not even about birthdays. It's not. It's more about cake. And I'm a Rihanna fan. I just put it out there. Number 1, I think she's incredibly beautiful and incredibly talented. And I go back to the beginning, you know, with Rude Boy and all that stuff. She is incredibly talented from Barbados. And, you know, to be honest with you, I had a beef with Chris Brown for a long time after that incident between the two of them. It's incredible. You know, some people get canceled, some people don't. But the song Birthday Cake, and again, emphasis on the cake, kind of a, again, popular culture term. Number four, kind of back to the altered images thing. And a lot of people know Bjork, right? Kind of a haunting vocal delivery with her. A lot of things about her were, she was very 120 minutes, and some of you don't know that reference, but she was one of these vocalists in the alternative college radio type scene that really broke out and became an international superstar. Before that, she was with a band called the Sugar Cubes, and they had a song called Birthday. I think this very haunting, melodic song is probably underappreciated. And if you're a person that kind of grew up in my era, I think that you'll appreciate it too. Number three, speaking of haunting, this is one of those songs that kind of scratches me where I itch, even though it's not a regular thing for me. Like, I love Blur, I do. But we go back to their first album, Leisure, and there's a very interesting song that maybe is not so recognizable because, you know, if you only know the hits, you only know the hits, right? But this is kind of a cult classic among their fan base. And again, it's called Birthday. And I would encourage you to check this one out. There's a reason it's number three for me. The top two are very popular songs. But I think this is one of those deals where this may be a song that you don't know that you'll probably like. Number two, even though this isn't really about birthdays, it's called Birthday. And it's from Katy Perry. And I don't have a beef with her because she did the Ole Miss thing. That doesn't bother me. I know some of you don't like it, but that's okay. I think Katy Perry, again, extremely talented. You know, we may not always align politically with stuff, but she sung a song called Birthday, and basically it's like making every day, you know, feel like our birthday. Like if she was our girl, that she says she is pledging to make every day feel like our birthday. Now, I don't know if that means that she's going to buy me a gift every day or bake me a cake, but it's an intriguing offer. It certainly is. And it's also a very well put together pop song. I think you'll enjoy that one. But number one, and maybe you weren't expecting this, but it's 50 Cent in the club because you say it's your birthday, right? But we don't, you know, because it's not your birthday. I think anytime that we can throw 50 Cent or something from, you know, Eminem or Dre in here in any list is probably a good thing. So, I dig it. I remember the very first time I heard this song, and I thought to myself, this guy's going to make it. And I remember seeing the video, and I thought, man, with the people he's got around him, this guy can't miss. Ultra successful businessman now. And I do like a lot of his takes about music. You know, you scroll through those reels. Like, if you ever stop on an Eminem reel, you know, the algorithm's going to send you 50 Cent and Dr. Dre and Snoop, and that, which is cool with me. I think that's a good way for the algorithm to work in a very positive way. But he's very, very protective of Eminem because Eminem is the one that kind of pushed for him to kind of have an opportunity. But I remember that first video and that little part about it. He goes, you know, I've been hit with a few shells, but I walk with a limp. And in the background, you hear, I'm all right. You know, I thought that was genius. You know, the placement there in that voiceover I thought was genius. But 50 Cent, love him or hate him, the guy's been ultra successful, and I love the fact that he defends Eminem as much as he does. And, you know, again, what a great maestro, right? Master of ceremonies as well, and great ambassador for the genre. So I know some people have a beef with that, but that's a you thing, not a we thing. But if you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanthi on X. He is a little bit behind on getting the list on Spotify, but he will get caught up. And we appreciate everything Roy does for us. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart, not just because of their exemplary service, their wide selection. They're Mississippi State folks. We like to keep business in the family whenever we can, and nobody knows True Maroon quite like the folks at Campus Bookmart. The last thing you want to do is you find a shirt that you really like and it's got a Mississippi State logo on it and you get it home and it's crimson, right? It's not maroon. Stick with people that know what maroon looks like and it can outfit your family in the latest of Mississippi State apparel. Everything you need to detail out your fan cave can be found at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is not a great shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet, at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal listener to this show, we'll give you a promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Roberts, and that gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Mom, I'm telling you now, football season's going to be here next month. Maybe it's crept up on you. Everybody in the family is probably outgrown what they had last year, or maybe it's a little bit threadbare, you know, because they've worn it so much, because they love Mississippi State stuff. Let's get some new clothes into rotation. Get something for yourself, too. We'll give you permission to do that. You've earned it, too, sweetheart. You have. And maybe nobody's told you lately, but you're beautiful and we love you. So show the people that you love that it's time to get some beautiful new maroon clothing at Campus Bookmart. All right, we've had some more recruiting news. No real surprises today. There were several players that announced their decision. They had offers from Mississippi State at some point. Cottrell Webb still hasn't announced. Mississippi State has kind of moved on from him. But, yeah, I mean, a handful of guys have done some things. And the latest commitment for Mississippi State, Tamario Johnson, a safety out of Pascagoula, Mississippi. And I really like him. Now, granted, he's only played 1 year of high school football, right? So you begin to think about that aspect of it. Not a big body of work to work with, but athletically, very impressive. 6'2", about 195 pound. Has really kind of transformed himself. If he had played college football and high school football a little bit longer, probably a bigger offer sheet. But pretty nice offer sheet considering his level of experience. A dozen offers when it's all said and done. Let's run it back here. Mississippi State, obviously. He took official visits to UNLV, went out and saw Dan Mullen and his group. And I think that's a nice endorsement because Dan Mullen knows developmental players from the great state of Mississippi and around the Southeast. So if Dan Mullen's willing to offer a kid and then bring him in for a visit, I feel pretty good about the take. I got a lot of respect for Dan Mullen's ability to evaluate and develop talent. I think this, not that I need Dan's approval, but I like having him in this situation. Tamario also visited Tulane and Charlotte, but he also held offers from Appalachian State, Arkansas State, Louisiana, Valley, South Alabama, Texas State, Texas Tech, and Vanderbilt. So a handful of Power 5 offers and another SEC offer, but this is a young man, too, that we expect to really develop into a really good player. And when you look at the raw materials, you look at the size, the wingspan, the speed, I think there's a lot to work with here. I like the take. I know many of you others will say, well, Steve, I don't know. Guys, basically the Iverson McCoy and Tamario Johnson thing was an either-or thing. Tamario Johnson made no bones about it. He absolutely wanted to be at Mississippi State. You know, we've had kind of an up-and-down relationship with Iverson. He's headed to Ole Miss now, and then we get to Mario. And I like Iverson McCoy. I do. I liked him more than I expected to when I saw him play in person. And he's gained a little size and length since then. I think he's a good player. I would have been happy either way. But ultimately, the decision was made, we're going to take one more safety. It proved to be Tamario Johnson. And so that's kind of where you sit. Now, again, there are some things that are concerning. I mean, like, we can't just sit here and act like everything is all just guns and roses, right? I mean, there's some things here you got to look at. There are a few questionable takes. But one of the things that I want to share with you, too, is the new rev share thing is happening, okay? There are a lot more restrictive things when it comes to player compensation. The old slush fund approach is going away, right? That's important to understand. Now, there are still needs for collectives. There's still needs for corporate deals, and that's really a big part of NIL now. It's kind of going back to what it was originally intended for, which is a great thing. In the beginning, you remember, hey, Will Rogers got a deal with Subway, and then Will Rogers, you know, had a deal here, and then this particular player had a deal with Apple or whatever. Those are good opportunities. Riley St. Clair, a deal with Maybelline or Revlon, whoever it was. Those are good things. And that's what NIL was supposed to be in the beginning. It wasn't supposed to be, well, we'll just write you a check for $10,000 and call it a day, and we get nothing from it. That's one of those things, too. You need the quid pro quo for it to be legal, and nobody ever really enforced that. So now we're kind of transitioning really back into what it was intended to be. And then there is the salary cap, the rev share salary cap. And so basically Mississippi State has taken a production approach over potential. Now there are obviously going to be some battles that you pick and say, hey, we're going to have to kind of pony up here because some very talented players out there. However, what do you think it does to your locker room when you've got a guy like Fluff Bothwell, right, that he goes out this year and, I don't know, runs for 800 yards or so, and then there's some freshman that shows up that may have, I don't know, 25 carries next year? Who deserves to make more money, right? The guy that you're signing on potential or the guy that you're retaining on production? That's an important aspect to this that I think a lot of our fans sometimes are missing, you know. And I'm not going to sit here and excuse the fact that we haven't done better in state, but as I pointed out on a recent show, it's not just us, it's Ole Miss too. But let's take a quick look and kind of where things sit with the in-state class. And this is a great in-state class. I don't really care what anybody else thinks about it. This is a very good in-state class. And I don't think that we're getting a big enough bite. Now, that may change. Obviously, we're having to sell 2-10. But, you know, you look at the Ole Miss side of things, you know, they won double-digit games in back-to-back years, and they're struggling to get some of the great in-state players, too. And so it's interesting. Not sure what's happened here with Braylon Womack. Let's take a look here. Did he decommit from Colorado? Did I miss that? Oh, now he's announcing August 22nd. Okay, so we'll see how that goes. But I know Preston Ashley committed up there. That's what I'm confusing. All right, so looking at the you know, the top players in Mississippi, and it looks like Tyler Wilson still got a little thing to go too. But, of course, Tristan Keys to LSU. Braylon Womack, we mentioned him at Hartfield Academy, an elite safety prospect. A lot of people think that he may choose to go to Ohio State, and he may. But the four that he's expected to pick from are Ohio State, Auburn, Texas A&M, and Florida. So, again, expected to leave the state. T.J. White, as expected, commits to Tennessee. Nolan Wilson, a defensive lineman out of Picayune High School that never really gave Mississippi State a solid look, commits to Alabama. A bit of a surprise today, and it's not going to stick, but Xavier McDonald out of Morton, Pooh Man McDonald, commits to Sacramento State. I think ultimately he ends up at Ole Miss. I don't think he ends up at Sacramento State. You know, Jaden Ross committed to Sacramento State early in the process. It makes me wonder what they're doing to incentivize these guys to commit to Sacramento State. Do you really, honest to goodness, do you expect a player from Morton, Mississippi with multiple SEC offers to sign with Sacramento State? I mean, honestly, no, you don't. Demarius Yates, former state commitment, headed to Ole Miss. Corey Wells headed out to Texas. Darion Albert, a defensive lineman that's got a ton of offers, headed to Tennessee. I'm eager to see what he does. He's kind of a short-limbed. He is a big, square-bodied, barrel-chested kid, so there's a place for him. But it'll be interesting. He's listed at 6'2". He's closer to 6'. And there's Jace Matthews, talked about him recently, too. Didn't visit Mississippi State. Tylen Wilson out of Pascagoula. We just committed his teammate. Didn't visit Mississippi State. Emmanuel Tucker, of course, a one-time Mississippi State commitment, sets a visit at Mississippi State, doesn't keep it, and then commits to LSU. We mentioned Preston Ashley committed to Colorado. Jalen McCoy, we've talked about him before, been committed to three different schools. State really not a factor with him, never really pushed him. And maybe we should have, I don't know. Zion Cotton, state's highest rated in-state recruit, 14th in the state. Then there's Bryson Cooley, who commits to LSU today. Sonny Shipp asked me last week what I thought. I said, I think it's too close to call, but if I had to, I would lean more towards LSU. And then Georgia got involved, and I was told he may slow things down. But even if he commits, he does expect to take an official visit to Georgia at some point during the season. But that's a tough thing, too, to have LSU come into the great state of Mississippi and take two of the top offensive linemen in the state. It's never a good thing. Matter of fact, the top two rated offensive linemen in the state are headed to LSU. That's not great. Jaden Taylor, the 16th ranked player in the state, obviously Kamario's younger brother. Amari Johnson commits to UNC for the second time. Committed to them, decommitted, now recommitted. Gavin Howard, the 18th rated player out of Holmes County Central, had an opportunity to commit to Mississippi State, kind of strung along for a while, and then I think some people moved ahead of him. Donnell Robinson out of Holmes County commits to Baylor. You know, that makes a little sense because Mason Miller, of course, former Mississippi State offensive line coach, is at Baylor, so he knows Holmes County. He knows Coach Rogers. He knows Donnell Robinson. He was recruiting him when he was here. That makes a little sense. We've already mentioned Iverson McCoy. Mitchell Smith, the offensive tackle from Picayune. Final three, did not include State or Ole Miss, commits to Vanderbilt. We need to update his picture, man. That picture looks like he's about 10 years old. Redarian Daniels, State on him a little bit early on, never have really pushed him. He's headed to Purdue, and, of course, Jaden Hill way underranked at 23rd. But you start running this thing down, there's just not a lot of in-state guys left. Trey Moore, wide receiver from South Haven, is undeclared. Dalton Toothman, who, another guy I think is undervalued. Really nice offer sheet. Chose State over a final grouping of Clemson, Ole Miss, and Auburn. And he's a 25th rated player in the state. I'm just not buying that. Jaden Cration, we know about him. Tylen Fortune, a kid from League County, or League Central. A lot of people really like him. Not the most fleet of foot. I think he's probably a G5 guy. And then you get a little bit deeper, Darian Kirksey, a kid from Harrison Central. I haven't watched him yet. Caleb Triplett, of course, recent Mississippi State commitment, and Micah Nickerson. So you're kind of working through this. You know, you've got a ton of kids committed. I mean, a ton. Around the great state of Mississippi, we even got kids committed to Liberty and some to Central Florida, Louisiana Lafayette, Georgia State. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there. Rondy Baker, I remember when Ole Miss offered him, some people suggested he was going to be like the next big thing in Mississippi. I remember watching his tape. I thought he was a little bit stiff. The jump cut isn't really there. Really more of a one-cut type runner, and he'll probably do well at Georgia State. But I remember when Ole Miss offered him, people were trying to say he's going to have a ton of Power 5 offers. He doesn't. So you work through this and you begin to kind of realize that maybe some of the early fleshings and all this were incorrect. Grant Kitchen's a kid that we really like out of Nanawaya. State elects to pass on him. He's headed to Southern Miss. I think it's a good place for him. Eric Perry out of DeSoto Central, committed to Auburn, ranked as the number 54 player in the state. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Ashton Moore out of Brandon. I really like Ashton Moore. I think he's undervalued too, headed to Arkansas State. Maybe not an SEC guy, but again, you just run through the list here. I mean, we got guys just committed to schools really all over the country, and I think it says a lot about the quality of high school athletes in the state for the 2026 class. But we're having a difficult time getting the top players to Mississippi State for visits. A lot of those guys came in for junior days and events like that, but when it came time for the rubber to meet the road, we had a difficult time with it. We did. And again, kind of looking at some comparison stuff, State's class, 25 commitments, and we're ranked 30th in the country. We are typically a top 30 recruiter. 10 of our commitments are from the great state of Mississippi. So not even half, but it's a lot more. Last year we just had three or four guys, so a lot more Mississippians this year. And that stands to reason, given the quality of the talent pool within the Magnolia State. But, again, we got to do a better job. And some of this, of course, and looking at this list here, the breakdown last year, we had a lot of guys from the junior college ranks that were products of Mississippi high schools. But not traditional Mississippi high school recruiting type stuff. And there hadn't been a lot of kids that have really been the state Ole Miss battle. And that's good for our industry, right? Because it drives clicks and people want to read what we have to say, what the Ole Miss writers have to say. The Ole Miss class right now is 37th in the country. So it's behind Mississippi State. Now, granted, they only got half the commitments we do. And that's one of the issues with State, is it's more quantity than quality. But among their 12 commitments, they got three from Mississippi, and that includes Iverson McCoy. Of course, they picked up Darius Shades. How interesting is it that two of their three are former Mississippi State commitments, one who wasn't a take the second go-around, and then Braylon Williams, a guy that we thought would end up at Mississippi State, and he may. He had set up an official visit to State, but ultimately canceled that trip to stick with Ole Miss. But that's kind of where we are and how things look right now. But, you know, the answer to a lot of this is not NIL. A lot of people are like, well, why aren't we doing this? You know, we got to save some money for the portal, right? Obviously, we need to be very competitive in the portal. We spent a ton of money last year in the portal. But the reality of it is we got to win some games. You know, it's tough to sell 2-10. And you think about that aspect of it too. You know what everybody else is saying, right? And I think that Zach Selman will have a lot of patience with Jeff Lobby, especially provided we show some progress this year. But we're 2-10 and we lose our starting quarterback last year and have to play a true freshman that many of you only saw the highlight videos, but he had a lot of growing up to do, and he will now do that at Baton Rouge as a backup quarterback. But once Blake Chapin went down, any possibility of us making a bowl game was over, right? I think we all saw it for what it was. I mean, obviously that loss to Toledo, the blowout to Toledo, had everybody thinking this is not going to go well. We were hoping to have an opportunity to go into the game with Florida with a winning record. And even though it was a somewhat of a competitive game, they just out-athleted us. Simple as that. But we got to win some games. You got to win games. And, you know, people ask me, you know, what do you consider progress this year? Well, you know, I don't think winning four games is progress. I mean, I know how the math works, but it's difficult to go out there and sell when you, hey, I've been here 2 years and we've won a combined total of six games. That's difficult. We got to go win games. It's like it was early in the Dan Mullen era, and people forget this. You know, Dan, in that first year, inherited so many amazing commitments. You know, Josh Boyd, Fletcher Cox, Cameron Lawrence, Tyler Russell. Of course, they had to kind of re-recruit him down the stretch, but, you know, Denias Timms was coming here. Bump was coming here. He may tell you different, but he was coming here. But there's a lot of those. You know, that was a great class, and I think this class may be the best one maybe since 15. But I don't know if you go back and you look at that group with 09. I mean, that's Mississippi State get Pernell McPhee in that class. And I remember getting a phone call. Hey, who is the first guy Dan Mullen needs to go see? I said, Pernell McPhee. That guy's a difference maker. Not to mention we had Georgia and Florida and other schools kind of nipping at our heels trying to get him. And he ultimately took an official visit to Georgia and still chose Mississippi State. That's always very interesting to me how it looks in hindsight. But Dan Mullen inherited a class that was pretty much put together. I don't know that Jeff Lebby inherited nearly as much. Now, granted, Jeff Lebby has the benefit of the transfer portal where Dan Mullen did not. And people forget this, right? The very first play, right, the very first play of the Dan Mullen era, you know, it's a wide receiver pass from Chad Bumpus to O'Neal Wilder. It fell incomplete, but we got a standing ovation because we were glad to see some innovation. It was more than 3 yards in a cloud of dust. So we were happy to see that, and I thought that was a great play for Dan Mullen to dial up, even though it fell incomplete. And then Chad Bumpus, obviously a guy that we expected to be a big part of things, and he was, ended up being a record holder for Mississippi State. But it's a different day and time now. But I think you venture to say that, you know, Dan Mullen probably inherited a nice core group of talent that maybe Jeff Lebby didn't. And again, the argument would be, well, he's able to go get it in transfer portal, but all of it was so quick. That first portal class proved to be just okay. You know, we had some guys in the portal we were excited about. And of course, you had guys like Trent Hudson that kind of a throw-in late in the portal class, and then some people thought he would be a real dude, and then turns out that he just takes a redshirt year and doesn't play at all, that didn't make any contribution. And, again, I think it's, you know, the depth chart came out, and I say this all the time, it's for entertainment purposes only. And Trent Hudson was on that first depth chart as a first-team receiver, And then he barely sees the field the first couple of games. He's like, you know what? I got to go. And you know what? I don't blame him. That's okay. It's part of it too. But the reality of every bit of this is that we have to show some signs of progress. Simple as that. If you're going to have some of these guys in the top 15 that haven't really been giving you a fair look, I mean, at least T.J. White visited us. Emmanuel Tucker one time was committed to us. Bryson Cooley visited us. But the reality of it is you have no chance to flip them if you do not show progress on the field. I don't care what facility upgrades you announce. I don't care what you do on the NIL side or the rev share side, which is much more restrictive than it was before the House settlement. You've got to be able to tell people that you're going to be able to win ball games. You're going to be able to take bowl trips. You're going to have an opportunity to go do some things and play games of significance. Nobody is going to come here just to get an education worth their salt. Everybody is going to come here for the student and athlete experience. And again, we can have all the great cold tubs, and we can have all the great red lights and all that kind of stuff, and we can change the game day experience as best we can, but we got to go win football games. That's the best brand of marketing you can ever have, is winning football games. I don't care what kind of graphics you make. I don't care what songs we play at the stadium. Just win ball games. It's kind of like a chicken and egg thing, right? People, what has to come first, winning on the recruiting trail? Well, yes, but it all works hand in hand. In order to recruit better, you've got to play better. And sometimes that falls on the shoulders of the coach. You've got to scheme some things up. And again, you go back and think about the great jobs like Gary Barnett did at Northwestern. They were historically a loser. Gary Barnett won some big games, went to Colorado, kind of resurrected that program after, you know, Coach McCartney had moved on. You know, you look at, you know, what Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State. You know, you look at what happened at Vanderbilt, right? There's just so many things you can look at and examples of where coaches have made the difference when maybe they didn't have highly recruited classes. And then, just like with Coach Franklin, all of a sudden you start winning some games, and then the higher recruited players begin to give you an opportunity because, like, hey, the quality at Vanderbilt education is worth something, but now you've shown me I can win games too. And I hate to make that parallel between Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, because I think we would say historically we've been much better than them, but right now I don't know that you could make that case. Clark Lee and them statistically weren't a great team, but they won some big ball games last year, including that game against Alabama. And next thing you know, you had people lining up to go play football at Vanderbilt. I want to be a part of this. We can do the same thing. You go out there and you win some games people aren't expecting you to win, because everybody likes Jeff Levy. I mean, like, Jeff Levy and this staff do a great job selling themselves, but you've got to give them more than a promise. You've got to give them some production that matches your promise in order for those people to sign on and spend their college career with you. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I would encourage you, if you're bringing a large group to town, and you should, stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Rather than have everybody kind of fend for themselves and get hotel rooms all over the Golden Triangle, how cool would it be to have everybody under one roof? Mom and Dad aren't getting any younger, and you know what, you aren't either. How nice is it when you get everybody together? What a gift it is for your parents and for yourself and for your family, for everybody to be able to break bread together, play cards together, watch TV together, just kind of get caught up and remember what it's like just to be a family. Back when you were a kid, everybody gathering for movie night, you know. It's a great thing. You can have those memories again by staying at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. We did it for New Year's, had a blast. We plan to do it again. We think it's great. I think you will too. 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's kind of a staycation for us, and every time I turned around, somebody needed something from the house, so I'd have to run out here and get it. Not to mention, come check on my dogs. But the reality of all this is that you need to plan a trip. Whether it's a midweek trip sometime this summer, maybe it's a back-to-school trip before everybody gets back into school. Our last big blowout of the summer. It's going to be over before you know it. It is. You know it. We're already at Independence Day, right? So be the linchpin in your family, whether it's a ball game weekend or a midweek trip, a work trip, because they accommodate work groups too. It's not just a family or friend type venue. So Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guests. When you also Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the booking options pop up. You can do Airbnb, VRBO, whatever works for you. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR, the number 10. They get you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to the show, you're saving money at the premier place to stay when you've got a big group. Full service kitchen, the wet bar, the great back porch area, the fire pit area, 6 bedrooms, 3 bath. Absolutely outstanding place to stay. Of this, I can personally attest. Do something special for your family. Because we say it all the time, we don't get together enough. And you know what? You're exactly right. But rather than wait to the next time, wait to the next funeral, or wait to the next little bump in, why don't you make some deliberate plans and stay at a premier place like the Stark Vegas Clubhouse? Okay. Sam Purcell, saw him at the movies the other day. Sam's always smiling, but he's had more reason to smile here in recent days as Mississippi State announces a contract extension for him. And listen, I tell you what's interesting, too. I've seen some people who are like, hey, you know, I don't get it. But, guys, I mean, Sam's had us in the tournament. You know, one of the things I think people need to understand, too, is that we had a special run with Vic Schaefer. And it never happened in our history. It may never happen again. So to compare Sam to that, I don't think is fair. But I know it's also one of those things you look at, and it's probably not something that you can just completely ignore. But if you look at what we've done, we're on solid ground, right? And so the new extension is going to take him through the 28-29 season. So I believe that's one of these things, too, you begin kind of get comfortable with, right, is that Sam Purcell is going to be women's basketball coach for the foreseeable future. We always worried a little bit about Auburn, and people used to tell me that Sam Purcell would probably crawl back to Auburn. He's an Auburn guy, right? Well, they went a different direction, and we knew day one that he was not expected to be a candidate for that job. We shared that. We don't like there to be any undue unrest, and we can absolutely avoid it. But here's a quote from Sam. I'd like to thank Dr. Mark Keenum, Director of Athletics, Zach Selman, for their trust to build on the success we've had. I'm extremely excited to work with Zach as he continues to take our athletic department to new heights. I'm blessed to be surrounded by an amazing staff and to coach great young women who represent their families, our program, the university, and the state of Mississippi with pride. Life is about people, and my family and I cannot be more excited to continue to call Starkville home and play in front of the best friends in women's basketball inside the hump. Hail State. So you begin to think about this in relation to the totality of the athletic department. And I think that's important, too. I think Zach Selman is doing a good job in that respect, right? Because, obviously, you had the automatic rollover in the Chris Jans contract. You know, we signed the big extension back in 24, and then Zach told us, and he and Chris would sit down and work out some particulars, but the automatic rollover was triggered by making the tournament again. Paying Chris Jans, paying $4.4 million for the next season. And so now he is going to be locked up to through 28 as well. And so, and you think about the deal that you've done with Brian O'Connor, you know, your three main secondary sports and everything secondary to football, those guys are locked up for a while. Got a 4-year deal pretty much with everybody now. And so now you get your football thing, too. I mean, you didn't roll over him last year. So you got 3 years remaining on that deal with Jeff Levy. But, you know, we're at a situation right now. I think we are at a place where we can kind of take a bit of a breath, I guess, because I think there is some stability that is returning. And, of course, we're having to go out there and continue to fundraise because there's no shortage of the things that we want and the things that we need. I think Zach Selman's done a good job in that respect, too, finding some fundraising avenues. And I've heard some people out there that have said, well, you know, it's not this. It's not real money. It's pledges and things of that nature. That's kind of how donations work, right? But you also have some liquid cash that's been infused into our athletic department. And they're doing a really good job. And I understand just last week, Selman and Levy working together doing some fundraising. You know, I mean, just last week. I mean, so, like, all of a sudden – we get done with all these official visits and the dead period begins. And then, you know, Levy and Selman are working together to try to raise some money to help, pay for the Howard complex, right? those efforts will continue. And there's never a destination when you're in this type of business. It's always just kind of part of the journey. But you make life a little easier on yourself, you know, go ahead and get this contract stuff resolved. And so I think this year, as you begin to kind of move forward, I think it's pretty safe to say, barring something unforeseen, you shouldn't have a coaching change. Now, of course, Chris Jans is going to get some people to call because Chris Jans is a great coach, you know. And I really thought last year he may get more calls. You know, the two previous years, you know, he was linked, of course, to Wichita State and to some other jobs. And there were a couple things, like his name was mentioned, kind of loosely connected to Miami last year. But there was never, ever really any serious threat last year, not that we're aware of. But I think this is smart. And I'm certain the coaches feel that way too. But I think with this new revenue sharing model and so much money being spent these days, I think you should probably get comfortable with a lot of these coaches, you know, barring a scandal around college athletics. You know, if you work in what was, you know, kind of a non-revenue producing sport for a while, you know, people are not going to go pay those big buyouts anymore. That's just not going to, unless some donor steps up and is willing to write you a check, you know, people have better uses for that money. Because you think about it, when you make the coaching change, you have to buy out your staff and then buy out the staff that you want to hire. So you write a check to everybody you fired, and then you write a check to the school whose coach you're taking. And sometimes that could be very expensive. And so people aren't going to throw money at a problem that may be resolved through another medium. And so I don't think you're going to see a ton of these non-revenue producing sports have massive coaching changes. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Brian O'Connor hire so significant. And let's be honest about this too. You know, if you're Zach Selman, how often do you want to go through this process? Well, you know, not very often. You'd like to get a generational coach. And certainly Brian O'Connor has, you know, plenty of years left, you know. And after being around him for a few times, he's got plenty of fire in the belly too. It's so interesting. I'm almost offended when people say, why worry about his age? Guys, he's a year older than me. And I can assure you, that guy is ultra competitive. Just being around him, this is a guy that gets it. This is a guy that knows how to motivate people. You can read it yourself in the comments that these young men are making to me. And Bryce Chance said it himself when I interviewed him this week. There are guys from that Virginia team that would die for O'Connor. So I say all of these things because we've gone through a transitional phase. And a lot of it's not really been our fault, right? I mean, because college athletics as a whole has been changing. How do we handle NIL? Well, then what do we do with the house settlement? And once we get the house settlement, how do we structure things? And we're still in that. You know, we're still kind of figuring out what's going to work, and what we know today will be different than what we know maybe a year from now. But it's pretty safe to say that there's more parameters around this. But I would venture to say Zach Selman and his peers around the country have likely navigated the most difficult time to be an athletic director in the history of college athletics. We have never had a time like this, as the transfer portal rules pretty much have changed every year since its inception. NIL rules have changed and have been loosely enforced every year since their inception. And then all of a sudden you have a third-party lawsuit that takes $20.5 million off your bottom line every single year. It is now a budget item that you have to spend the money. It's not like, well, you can spend up to this money. You got to spend it all. And every nickel's got to be accounted for. And so it used to just be, hey, we got to go out here and hire coaches and walk around, shake hands, and just go raise some money. It's a completely different animal now. And I can see a lot of people probably getting out of college athletics because of how crazy this has been. But also, too, I think you're going to see some people that are involved in pro sports probably shift to the college ranks because they have a level of expertise that many people in college don't. It's like, hey, I'm used to having to deal with collective bargaining agreements and contracts and salary caps and things of that nature. And that's where we're headed. Right? And you've seen some teams out there that have gone out and hired professional people from professional sports to be general managers from certain sports. And so I say all of that to say this. is that I believe we're beginning to make a shift more towards normalcy, as normal as things can be, right? Because many of you were like totally against compensating student athletes, which I think was wrong. But what we got was not what we were initially offered, right? It all changed. But I think now with the rev share thing and now greater guardrails around NIL, I think you're going to see things become a little more commonplace where you're not having somebody constantly call you and ask you for $100. You know, we still want you to pay it if you can. But I think, again, things are changing in the right direction. But there's more to come. And it's just a matter of time before we have a collective bargaining agreement and we have a players union, and that becomes an issue as we kind of move forward. And I think that's probably the best thing. And there's some people in college athletics that have been calling for that from the beginning. Let's just go ahead and get it done. But no, we had to go through all this. And I spoke with somebody this week. I thought it was funny. Somebody said, well, your CBA is too complicated. And they goes, it's more complicated than this? What we're having to do now? Are you kidding me? It's a very complicated process. And things will settle. And I believe we're kind of at the beginning of the end of all of this. And I know there's going to be some more lawsuits and things of that nature. And all of that won't really impact you or I. But I know this, that here in about 4 weeks or so, we're going to be writing practice reports about football. And your enthusiasm about coming to Davis-Wade Stadium and seeing those incredible LED lights, and we play Arizona State, it's going to be exciting times. And you're not going to be thinking about house settlement or rev share or NIL or recruiting, because it's going to be game time. And that's why we buy into this stuff, right? I mean, it's become a 365-day enterprise for everybody involved, including the fans. But at the end of the day, what plugs you in is the chance to see your university put a winning team on the field and win games of importance and things that matter. That's what you put your emotional investment into. Everything else is just kind of details. So let's kind of maybe begin to kind of accept that maybe things are going to calm down for a bit, and let's go win some ball games, right? If you haven't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. Duty Noble Book, the dude, is currently number 4 on the Mississippi bestsellers list. How cool is that? All those months after release, it's number 4. Thank you for that, and you can run out to your Mississippi independent bookstore, maybe help get it to number 1. I appreciate so many of you that have been so supportive over the years of the books, and you know, we'll do something sooner rather than later, but it's been a very busy year for your good friend and host too, and sometimes I can't commit to things, especially we're anticipating a coaching change and things of all that. It's just been, it's been such a busy stretch. I could not do a good job writing a book at this point, but we'll get something done soon. But yeah, you can get all my sports titles there. Signed copies, along with When the Bottom Falls, which of course is my personal memoir, really about, you know, a life of recovery. And if you are somebody that's in recovery or need to be, or perhaps know somebody that is, or know somebody that may just need a little bit of encouragement, I would encourage you to get that book, When the Bottom Falls, same website. Come join us at True West Float Spa of Starkville. You can come float. Been open today, busy again today, even on the 4th. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you may have. We'd love to have you come float. Give yourself a break. You may be a person that suffers with chronic pain or anxiety. We may be able to help you. We've helped many others. Making no guarantees. But at the end of the day, maybe just giving yourself a break is what you need to do. Whether you have chronic pain or anxiety or not, everybody has stress. Everybody needs some time to themselves. I share with people all the time. We talk about, well, I'm just going to go spend some time to myself. And we're on our phones, the TV's on, the ceiling fan's rolling. There's still so much overstimulation. When I go float, I can shut all that stuff out. And it's just amazing to me. I think it would be amazing for you, too. Come give it a shot. True West Float Spa of Starkville. And, of course, come join us over at jeanspage.com. You'll be glad you did. The best source for Mississippi State information that the world has ever seen. Until next time, let's all live our lives In a way, we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.